Welcome to one of two bonus episodes that I have for you just to keep you a little bit of company on the run-up to Christmas. This first episode is with the marvellous Annie Scott. And yes, yet again, I have invited someone on purely because I was just drawn to them. Annie and I don't know each other in real life. In fact, we happened upon each other in Substack. Go and follow Annie over there. She is right when she says that she is coming at her 40s from a place of self-discovery, confidence, and joy, and it's a lovely place to progress from. Okay, enough of me. Here is Annie. Hello, hello, and welcome to From Inside the Hive with me, Jane Galloway from Quiet the Hive. Sometimes, as you know, if you're a regular listener, we happen upon guests, and this is a lovely happen upon. So I was hanging out on Substack recently, and I came across the wonderful Annie Scott, who is a writer, and I am pretty sure that all of you listening will be really interested in some of the topics that she writes about, and I'm not going to give them away now because they form some of the questions as we go. But without further ado, I will say good morning, Annie Scott. How are you?
Morning, Jane. I'm extremely well on this grey and miserable day.
Yeah, we were just lamenting the fact that it was beautiful frost on Saturday and now it's grotty and rainy and blur. But when people listen to this episode, it will be the 15th of December. So hopefully everyone will be getting in the mood and maybe listening with a glass of fizz or elderflower cordial or whatever makes you happy in the festive period.
Maybe a mince pie in hand.
I reckon pause, go and get a mince pie and then come back to listen to that when you've got both things in your hand. So Annie, tell us a little bit about you. Who are you and what lights you up?
Great question. Big question. So who am I? Who am I? Who are any of us?
It's a good place to start.
Absolutely. So I'm Annie. And I'm a writer, and I suppose my headline is writer and burnout survivor. So my sort of big overarching story is I was the good girl. I did the big corporate thing. I went to London, I got a job, I progressed, I became a comms director at a FTSE 100. And then I had an epic burnout, and that was in 2016. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've been changing a lot in my life and writing about it and writing about my experiences and really just kind of questioning all of those things that we are told that we should do. And it turns out maybe they don't work for us. So that's kind of what I spend my time focusing on now. But in terms of what lights me up, it's a really interesting question, because a lot of the work I've been doing on myself in the last few years has really been focused on answering that question. Because I think, like a lot of us, I just spent the first half of my life essentially doing what people told me I should be doing. And I'm kind of thinking the second half of my life is focusing on working out actually what matters to me, and what, to your question, lights me up. So I guess that's a bigger question than a kind of pithy one-liner.
That's all good. Sometimes you have an immediate answer to that question, don't you? You can say, well, these are the things that light me up. And sometimes you think, actually, that's exactly what I'm exploring. And that,
right, exactly.
The good girl and the way we are brought up to not show off and put others first and do all our chores before we do any of our play and be a good girl, compared to what I like to call this midlife awakening that a lot of us are experiencing. And a lot of my listeners are around the age where they're starting to realize they've put everyone else first for so long that they've forgotten even what their own dreams are because they've prioritized everyone else's.
And
it sounds like you're kind of in the middle of that transition right now.
Totally, totally. And I completely relate to everything you say. You know, I used to be married, I got divorced, and I remember coming up, sorry, we're really jumping into this, aren't we?
No, go for it, it's all good.
But I remember one of the big, huge, terrifying feelings I had when I left my husband is I had absolutely no idea who I was, because mm-hmm. I was so used to putting him first. And I did that throughout my entire life, not even with my husband, with every relationship I had. I had absolutely no idea who I was.
Yeah.
And was just completely lost and confused. So, I guess the big headline when you ask me that question is the thing that lights me up most is having conversations like this.
Yay.
I love people's stories and learning from what other people have actually been doing and pain that they've been through, rather than a kind of glossy, sanitized version of it.
So I find that really interesting. And one of the things I came across, because you are not only on Substack, you are a Substack featured publication, aren't you? You're pretty special in the world of Substack, I'd say.
I'm kind of a big deal. I don't like to gloat, but I'm featured. Only for 2023. I've got this amazing badge that says featured publication 2023. And I'm like, oh God, I've only got a few more weeks of that.
Why didn't I get it in January? It's so cool. It's amazing. But when I was starting to look a bit more deeply into what you do over on Substack, and so divorce, work burnout, depression, death of your mum. Mm-hmm. I read those and I thought, yes, yes, yes. And I know that both of our experiences, and anyone listening who can relate to what we're talking about, will be very, very different. You know, our experience of divorce will be very different. Our experience of bereavement will be very different. But I definitely realized then there was a reason that I was drawn to you just from a tiny comment. It must have been meant to be. But tell me, you said about you love hearing other people's stories and beyond the gloss. Why does that matter to you? And why does telling your story around some of those things matter so much to you?
I think, first of all, sort of with my comms hat on, so I worked in PR and comms for 20 odd years. And as humans, we learn through stories. That is the best way that we take in information. I'm a bit geeky, and I've kind of got really into sort of the science of storytelling, and it's become very in vogue over the last few years, and there are some great books on the topic. But our brains are wired to remember things through story, and that's why, you know, in human evolution, we have sort of this tradition of passing down stories. And, you know, we can all relate to this, if I tell you a story about something I did, you're much more likely to remember it than if I give you a sort of how-to guide on, I don't know,
facts or something like that.
Right, exactly, yeah. And I guess my personal experience of this is, and I can apply this to kind of all the areas that you've mentioned, but if I talk specifically about, so when I burnt out at work, I felt a huge amount of shame because I had this big high-flying career. I was doing super well. I'd always achieved. I mean, underneath it all, I was a mess and was terrified I was about to be found out at any second. But on the face of it, everything was perfect and I had a good life. And then I think because I'd been so terrified that I was going to be found out, when I eventually burnt out, and my burnout was epic. I mean, I literally couldn't function. I was suicidally depressed. I had to move back in with my parents and quit work. We're not talking, I was a little bit tired. It was serious. I didn't talk to anyone about it for a while because I was so ashamed, because I was like, I haven't been able to do the thing that everyone else seems to be doing quite happily and just getting on with. But as I started to talk to people, I found everyone I spoke to, pretty much without exception, had either been through something similar or had a friend who'd been through something similar. And it just felt like this thing that nobody was talking about. And I mentioned before we started recording, but I've written a book that I'm currently trying to get published. And the genesis of that book was actually, I just went around and interviewed people about burnout. And I found so many interesting stories. When I started the project, I thought, oh, it'll just be people who are doing sort of corporate jobs like me. Mm-hmm. It wasn't at all. I interviewed a Royal Marine, an actress, a surgeon, sort of everyone and everything, men and women, a vast array of different industries. And it kind of evolved from that. And actually the book is now much more about me than it is that, but that's a separate story. But I just found the process of doing that was so helpful for me, because when I did go back to work, I remember sitting there the night before I went into the office, absolutely terrified. And I was on my computer Googling sort of what's advice for people going back to work after burnout. Yeah. And it was all really clinical. It was all, make sure you make a to-do list and make sure you're super organized. And I didn't find that helpful at all. But what I did find really helpful was just hearing that I wasn't alone and that other people had been through this and understanding the different ways in which they dealt with it. And I found the same thing with every other sort of big life thing that I've been through. So as you touched on, my mother died in 2019, very, very suddenly. And the thing that helped me the most was talking to people who'd been through the same thing. When I got divorced, I had to kind of find my tribe. I was only 32 when I got divorced, so I was really young and I didn't know anyone else who'd been divorced. All my other friends were getting married. Yeah. And yeah, I've just always found it personally really helpful to connect with people going through the same thing. And I guess that's sort of what I've tried to do with my Substack. I tend to take topics that I kind of feel like, is anyone else feeling this? And every time I hit publish, I'm like, oh god, what if I'm a freak? What if nobody relates to this?
No one else says, yeah, me too. They all go, what? Yeah, exactly.
Tumbleweed.
It's really interesting though, that use of the word shame. Mm. It's such a strong and powerful emotion that stops people in their tracks and stops you from sharing what it is that is making you feel that shame. And it can be a whole range of things, from extremely huge things to sort of smaller things. But actually hearing from other people who are having that experience can really help lessen your shame around it and change the narrative around what your experience is and how you interpret that experience and move on from it, I think. Because shame is such a, it's a short word, but it's a massive, massive thing that can really debilitate, can't it?
Oh, totally, completely. And it's one of those, the kind of, I think the big secret with shame is it will eat you up inside, but as soon as you voice it,
yeah,
it's like all the demons run away.
Yeah.
And I think so many of us just sit with things inside ourselves that kind of eat us up. And yeah, it's so, it just, I think there's a great quote, I think it's Brené Brown.
She is amazing.
And now I can't actually remember the quotes, but if you Google great Brené Brown quotes about shame, you'll find them.
I'm sure, yeah.
No. But it's something along the lines of shame can't survive being put into the light. So
yeah, exactly, that's exactly it, isn't it? If you talk about it, if you draw attention to it, if you mm-hmm. share the story or hear other stories around that, it does lessen it. It does genuinely take away its power to a certain extent, I think, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's just, I think, yeah, what I'm sort of trying to do is sort of a bigger version, I guess, of that conversation you might have with a friend over dinner, mm. where you sort of sheepishly say something that you're feeling, and that friend of yours goes, oh my god, me too!
Yeah, absolutely. And you never, it takes someone being brave to say it for everyone exactly. else to have permission to open up and share their experience of that.
Exactly. And I seem to have this sort of slightly weird, it's funny because I'm risk averse and anxious about so much in life, but I have this sort of slightly kamikaze attitude to, do you know what? if I feel something, I'm just going to say it and see if anyone else agrees.
Absolutely. I mean, if people go onto your Substack, they will see such articles as coming sort of up close and personal with a vagina, for example. That's one of the stories there. Being hit on by inappropriate men, I think that's there too.
Yeah, that's there. I like to share, Jane.
Sharing is caring. That's what they say.
And also, I sort of, again, my sort of attitude to when I was sort of dealing post burnout, and as I say, going through this process, which I'm still very much going through, of figuring out what lights me up.
Yeah.
I've gone and done a lot of weird shit. And I think, again, it's just been quite an extreme response to just doing what I was meant to do for so long and having this very traditional upbringing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've sort of, you know, the often close with the vagina was, I actually got commissioned a while ago to write a series of features about sex. So I was looking for weird things to write about. And I came across this organization, who actually are currently being investigated by the FBI because they're basically a sex cult.
Holy cow.
I wanted to hang out with them for a bit. I was like, this is interesting. Maybe there's something in this.
Well done for not being sucked in, for want of a better phrase.
Do you know what? I think one of the things I've learned about these things is it's very easy to get. I think if you're in a vulnerable state and you're looking for answers, as a lot of us are,
yeah,
it's actually very easy to get taken in by someone who seems confident. I think this is totally going off topic, but that's one of the things I've learned and worries me slightly about a lot of kind of the wellness industry.
Sure.
It can be easy to get sucked in.
Yeah.
In weird and wonderful things that aren't necessarily what you would naturally be wanting to do.
Absolutely. I was on a call recently, actually, and it was a sort of discussing a book that people had been reading, and someone was celebrating the fact that they'd just secured their first client for some coaching sessions, despite the fact that this person had never trained in coaching. And it just, you know, you just think, it's not really sitting very comfortably with me. That doesn't feel like it's a very safe space for your person who you've just sold this to enter into. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a tiny end of the wedge, but yeah, there's a lot to look out for. And absolutely, if you're in a vulnerable position or a vulnerable state, then you're more likely, if you find something that speaks to you a little bit, maybe to get in without questioning it.
Exactly. I think, funnily enough, I was having a really similar conversation with a friend of mine on Friday about the coaching industry, because I've had some great coaches and I think it can be brilliant, and I'm actually potentially interested in training myself.
Yeah.
I was talking to a friend of mine who's a very successful and very good coach, and she was making that point. She was like, it's completely unregulated.
Yeah.
She's like, you could go and train for years and spend a fortune on it, or you could just set yourself up online and say you're a coach and no one's going to know the difference.
Oh, exactly. It's quite scary, isn't it, really?
I know. I'm not going to name names, but I know some people who work as coaches who, one of the things I've written about is friends acting bizarrely. And I have a former friend of mine who acted in a very bizarre way and is a very troubled individual, and she works as a coach. I'm kind of like, oh gosh. Really?
Yeah. maybe physician heal thyself first.
Exactly.
But what I love about your approach is that you very clearly say that, you know, there is a place to discuss the trauma and the perimenopause and the downside of being in our 40s, but I love that you're really intentional about wanting to talk about joy. About, in fact, you say, let's make this the decade, so your 40s, of self-discovery, confidence, and joy. And that, you know, you exude that. That's obviously where you are headed. And it's funny, once you start looking for it, you start finding it, don't you? So I talk about gratitude journaling all the time because it's so important to look for the good
because the more you start to look for it, the more you find it. So the fact that you're intentionally focused on self-discovery, confidence and joy really made me feel all the warm fuzzies inside.
Oh, that's so lovely to hear. It's funny you mentioned that. One of the things I was thinking when I started doing this work on Substack was, I don't ever want to talk about menopause. I think it's great that it's become this hot topic and no one's embarrassed about it anymore and there's so much information about it, but I sort of feel like this starting to tip the other way. And I'm in my early 40s, I'm 42, and I now have conversations with my friends where I'm like, I am fucking terrified. Like, is it inevitable that over the next few years, I'm going to turn into a complete lunatic and probably my whole personality is going to change and dreadful things are going to happen? Because that's how it's starting to feel.
I think just preempt it and embrace the mania earlier. That's what I'd say.
Right. Okay. That's good advice. That's good advice.
So. That's about that poem about when I'm old, I will wear purple. I think
it's
a really good one. Just, you know, but that's what you're doing, aren't you? You're claiming your approach into midlife. I'm about to turn this week. I turn 48. So I'm the other end of the scale, a bit further on. Thank you. But there is something about, you know, that midlife and that awakening and that seeking of yourself and the joy and caring less about what other people think. That was a big thing for me. And what is it for you that makes that midlife approach so special?
I totally relate to that. And I'm really interested that you're saying that, you know, or you have in your audience a lot of women who are sort of going through the same thing, because I sort of didn't realize it was a thing. And I think why does it matter to me? I think, as I say, because my own story is so much toeing the line, doing the good girl thing, and not spending any time thinking about what I wanted. And also, as you say, caring less.
Yeah.
And I spent my entire 20s terrified about what people thought of me, absolutely terrified. And I think it's harmed me in a lot of ways, because it's meant career-wise I didn't go and do the things I wanted to do. And it's held me back in a lot of ways. So I think it's a combination of sort of having that burnout meltdown and realizing actually life's too fucking short. It's a combination of factors. I think, I'm being really convoluted in this. I think midlife is a really interesting point because there's a lot of things happening at once. And I see this, a lot of the people actually I talk to about burnout, it happened to them in their sort of mid to late 30s. And I think there's a point that happens where you're starting to get much more senior in your career, which means quite often you're getting away from the thing that got you into that career in the first place, because you're getting more senior and you're managing more. And there's more and more pressure on you, and you're sort of starting to think, I'm not sure if this is necessarily what I want to do, but I'm so far down the line in terms of finance, and maybe you've had a family by that point, that you feel completely trapped. I think there's also a point where you're starting to make a bit more money, so you can sort of conceive of a bit more freedom. I think people's friendships change a lot in those years as well. And people go in different directions. And some people, you know, I don't have kids. Most of my friends do have kids. There's a sort of natural divide that I think happens there. You just start, I think, also becoming a bit more aware of your mortality. So my mum died very suddenly, and it's such a cliche, but I remember being with her in that room on the day she died. She was in Cheltenham Hospital. She was basically sort of just on a lot of morphine and was pretty much asleep for that last day. And I just remember standing in that room, and I got a text from someone at work. I just started a new job. It was awful timing. Awful timing. My selfish mother dying.
Honestly, they're rubbish, aren't they?
And I just remember reading this message and having this really clear thought of, oh my God, nothing matters. The only thing that matters in life are love and people and relationships, and everything else is bullshit.
Yeah.
So I think for me, midlife has kind of just been a point of all of that understanding coming together with this sort of mortality of shit. We've got one life. Like, I'm not going to wait till I retire like my parents did to actually do the things that matter to me, largely because I'm probably not going to ever be able to retire.
Yay for our generation.
Yeah, but there's a sort of, yeah, there's a magic alchemy, I think, that happens as you get older. And I think it can be really positive.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And that combination of aging in a really positive way and the experience of trauma is incredibly powerful in terms of reminding you about what matters. So there's research around how trauma can really lead to significant, fabulous things, i.e. you learn about your own inner strengths, you learn about what matters, you become less materialistic, there's a more willingness to live in the present moment. And some of that fades over time as reality sort of comes back in. But I think we learn those lessons going through trauma, and the things that we can hold on to. And it sounds almost kind of weird and a bit perverse to talk about a traumatic event leading to something that can be quite positive. But I think if you're going to go through the shit, you may as well actually take the good stuff from it as well. Yeah. So that sort of text message coming in and you going, that is really not what matters. That's the thing you have to cling on to on a day-to-day basis, isn't it?
Absolutely. And again, I completely relate to what you're saying. I think quite a lot of shit's happened to me over the last decade. And it's really made me who I am.
Yeah.
And although a lot of it's been really tough, I don't regret any of it. I mean, obviously, I wish my mother was still alive, but that's something I didn't have any control over. Yeah, I think I was joking with someone actually over the weekend that I don't tend to trust people who haven't been through some shit.
There's definitely a tattoo you get when you come through the other side, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. I think it chips away at all the sort of bullshit that you adopt as you're growing up, perhaps.
Yeah, and not even consciously. It's what's almost foisted upon you by society or by the lessons you're taught or whatever it is. It's not an intentional gathering up of this is who I am. It's more that you shed it as you get older, I think.
Yes, exactly. And you're sort of shedding those layers, and what you're left with is actually who you are.
Yeah, I think so.
I've had a couple of conversations recently with younger women, actually, who one of them is my boyfriend's daughter. She's 17. And another one, really lovely woman I met actually at a Substack gathering a couple of weeks ago, who's in her early 20s. And I was talking to them both about confidence and, you know, is exactly to your point and what we've been talking about, the sort of confidence that you get as you get older. And that's probably my favorite thing about getting older. And both of them were like, oh my God, so it gets better.
But isn't it dreadful that you have to wait until you suddenly wake up one morning? It was almost, it felt like it was overnight for me, that I just woke up and thought, holy crap, I don't need to worry what the fuck anyone else is thinking about me. I just need to focus on my own shit, and that is enough. But it took a number of things and a kind of awakening almost overnight on my 40th. It was like, whoa, what a revelation.
Really?
Yeah.
What happened? You literally woke up.
So I had, my mum was diagnosed with secondary breast cancer. And I suddenly realised that I was in a marriage that I felt very lonely and unhappy in. And he is a lovely man and we're still good friends, but it wasn't right for me.
Yeah.
And it was those two things. and the realization that I wasn't doing the stuff that brought me joy, and I was losing myself in my children, in work. I was being what everyone else needed me to be, to the extent that I lost sight of who I was and what brought me joy and what mattered to me. And it did feel like this almost epiphany. I suppose it takes lots of little moments, and then suddenly you have this whoa moment. And that's what it felt like for me.
Wow. Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much. And to you too. It sounds like we're both rocking it, quite frankly, Annie. Listen, so we're recording this in early December, but it's going to land around the 15th. And I wanted to take an opportunity with your experience of burnout and coming back from that. Mm-hmm. And I know that your burnout was significant, but you can have, I think, mini pockets of, oh my godness, or let me just run away, or I want everyone to go and let me sit in the dark quietly. Mm-hmm. And I think this time of year, it can feel really overwhelming, especially for people who are the architects of Christmas, the people who want the house to be sparkly and want the magic to be there and work hard to make sure everyone's needs are met. And I was wondering if you had any advice for people who are listening to this now thinking, oh my God, mini bits of burnout, that's what I'm feeling right now. And I was wondering if you had anything you could share that might help people.
Oh, yes. I have so much wisdom. I think so much I want to say on this. I think the first thing I'd say is, I think we all, there's a lot of perfectionism that goes with Christmas.
Yes.
I think probably more than any other time of the year, because we want to create, and not to massively gender stereotype, but women in particular, I think, want to create this absolutely perfect magical Christmas for everyone. And it's what we feel, again, I always come back to this word, it's what we feel we should do. And I remember seeing it with my mum. Like, my mum always said her favorite day of Christmas was Boxing Day, because it was finally over and she can relax.
I get that.
So I think the first thing is just maybe think about questioning that this is your job to do alone. Because actually Christmas is about joy and love, and whether it's family, or my family is tiny, it's basically now me and my dad, or friends. And just consider letting other people be a part of that, rather than going, it has to be all my stuff on my own and I have to do this and everyone else needs to be relaxing. That actually there can be some joy in getting help from other people. And I speak as a person who has not naturally asked for help, but I see my boyfriend doing this with his kids. He's very good at getting them involved in stuff, and they might grumble, but then they actually kind of enjoy it. So I think first thing is, don't be afraid to ask for help. Second thing I'd say is, I wrote an article actually this weekend about sort of the allure of stuff and how we can, and particularly with sort of Cyber Monday having just gone, how we can get, I'm certainly very guilty of, no matter what I go through and how many times I have epiphanies, that stuff doesn't matter. Or I still fall into the trap of thinking, if I just had this, then life would be perfect.
Yeah.
And I concluded that article by saying, if I reflect on my life, my happiest, most joyous memories are always about people, not stuff. So again, I think that's really important to remember with Christmas, that actually the emphasis and the joy can come from spending time with people that you love. Mm-hmm. It's not about whether the tree looks perfect or whether you've got the decorations just so. And I think we can focus and fixate on those things as a way of trying to control the situation that feels a bit overwhelming. Yeah. But actually, it's people that make it.
Totally.
And then the third and final thing I'd say is, and I'm going to be careful how I say this, because I'm super, super stressed. and somebody tells you to just relax, you tend to want to just punch them in the face.
One way of stress relief, I suppose.
Yes, exactly. But I've read something recently, I wish I could remember where it was, that was talking about one of the things of burnout is, one of the sort of symptoms of burnout is you are incapable of switching off, totally incapable of switching off. So no matter what you're doing, and again, I can relate to this from my experience, because yes, I was burning out at work because I was doing everything 100 miles per hour, but I was doing everything 100 miles per hour in my personal life as well. So everything was going. So I think we have to, and it feels very unnatural, particularly if you've got a lot to do, but we need to start thinking about taking rest as a proactive activity, not something that we'll do when we got to the end of the to-do list. So
because you never get to the end of the to-do list, do you?
Never, exactly. Another great quote I read about burnout once, which again I can't remember, well done to whoever said it, is it's burnout is what happens when you're trying to play an unwinnable game.
Yeah, and it is that, isn't it? Because it's just the constant trying to get things done, and you can't exactly. Be 100% of the things 100% of the time to 100% of the people. You just can't do it.
Exactly. And I think with Christmas is an unwinnable game. Like, you're always going to have been able to do something more, or put up more decorations, or get more food in, or buy more presents, or wrap them more perfectly, or whatever it is. So maybe just take some time to reflect on that, and that what actually is it that you're trying to win, and is that achievable? And just, again, I hate saying this because it's something that's so irritating, but really just try and carve out some time to just do nothing.
Yeah.
And don't think of that as being lazy, because it's not.
No, it's it really
energy
isn't.
Energy in, energy out. You can't keep expending energy and not top anything up.
Totally. I really love those. So there's something about asking for help where you need it.
Mm-hmm.
Something about scheduling rest. So making sure it's actually in your diary and you do it, and you treat it as a top thing to do. And that thing about less materialistic, more people is really interesting as well, because the people who you love and who bring you joy are not necessarily the people you feel obligated to spend time with as well over Christmas. Something about creating time to really think about, who is it that I want to be with? Who is it that I want to spend time with? Mm. And even if you can't be together in person, making time for a online glass of fizz or something like that is so, that's the stuff that tops you up, isn't it? It's the people, it's the love, it's the feeling. And trying to create a perfect Christmas, if you think back to your own childhood, it's often not the fact that the gift under your tree was perfect and it had beautiful ribbons and it had rosemary through the paper or whatever it might be. It's the fact that actually, do you remember that Christmas where we played sardines and we couldn't find Fred for half an hour because he hid so brilliantly? Or do you remember the time when the Christmas tree fell over because the cat climbed up it, or whatever it is? It's that
literally happened. Yeah.
There you go. But it's all of that stuff that make it memorable and special. And it's about the people you share it with, I think, a lot of the
time. Yeah, but we put so much pressure on ourselves.
Yeah,
so much pressure. And I do this, even with just my dad coming round. I'm like, it must be perfect.
Yes, exactly. It's bizarre.
Give a shit.
Yeah. If you ask him what matters, it might be that the fizz is cold and that the mince pies are plentiful or something like that. It doesn't have to be perfect. It's really interesting. So if you're listening to this and you're feeling a bit overwhelmed, then now Annie and I are giving you permission to press pause, but don't tell anyone you press pause. Tell them you're going to listen to this podcast on your bed in your room for half an hour. Go have a nap or go out for a walk or whatever it is that you need to do. Annie and I give you full permission if you need it to go and do that.
Just go sit in your car.
Yeah, also good. I'm going to the shops. Where recently, actually, I can't remember where I read it. We're good at remembering where we've read things, aren't we?
Yeah.
But there was a woman who used to do her online shopping, and then she'd tell her family she was going to go and do the shopping, and she'd spend an hour in the cafe and then just do click and collect. So she'd pick up the shopping.
Amazing.
So she got an hour to herself with a book in a cafe. And I just thought, that is genius. That is my aspiration. It's just perfect.
That is a great life hack.
It is good, isn't it? I like that one.
We're so bad at this. I have one of my best friends is, she's single mother. She runs her own business. And I'm always having to shout at her to just take some time for herself because she just won't do it.
Yeah.
And she gets more and more run down, and I can see her getting ill. And yeah.
You can't be the best person you want to be for the things you're trying to service.
And this is it. It's such a cliche, the whole fit your own oxygen mask first before helping others. But it's so true. It's not, if you're worried about being selfish, it's not selfish, because you literally can't help anyone else if you're not looking after yourself. You can't. You can do it to a certain amount, but then you're going to crash.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my goodness, Annie, what great conversation. Right, I cannot let you go without asking this last question, which I ask all my guests.
Mm.
What advice, Annie Scott, would you give your 21-year-old self?
See, I've been, you did give me a heads up about this, and I've been thinking about the white there. I've been thinking about how to speak properly, the right way to word this, because essentially what I'd want to say to my 21-year-old self is be more confident. But I know people say that to me now, and I want to kick them, because you can't just be confident. It's not, I'll just press the magic confident button and then everything will be fine. Thank you so much. I've been told this so many times by friends, by people I've worked with, by bosses, and it's the least helpful advice in the world. So I think what I'd actually start by saying is just ignore what everyone else is doing and really think about what brings you joy and what lights you up, and that's okay if that's not what everybody else is doing, and you don't need to ask for permission. I think I've spent so much of my life waiting for someone else to give me permission to do what I wanted to do, and that's you know, not to get too deep with it, but that's very, you know, that was my upbringing. I was the girl, and you asked for permission, and you waited for permission, and you did the right thing. So of course I was going to end up like that. But if I could have just learned a bit earlier that I didn't need that, then I think that would have started me on the road to confidence that I didn't get to until basically everything crashed down and went tits up, and I kind of had to relearn everything.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, Annie, I love that. That is such a good piece of advice. I hope that everyone listening takes that well on board. Give yourself permission. Do the things you love. Don't worry about what other people think about it. It's so important.
And by doing that, you'll find your people. I think that was the other thing. When I was 21, I was terrified about not having friends. But actually, I just ended up hanging out with people who were interested in stuff that I wasn't, and I was faking it the whole time. But if you just go and do the shit that you want to do, you will find your people.
I love that. I love that. That's brilliant. Thank you so much, Annie. If people want to find out more about you or hang out with you, I have to slow my speech right down. how would they do that? Where would they find you, Annie?
So the main place you can find me is on my Substack. So I write a Substack called Midlife Mess with Annie Scott. And I write on there every week, sometimes more than that, but I commit to doing that every week. So come and join me there. I've got a really lovely community growing there of like-minded folk. And you can also find me on Instagram. I've got too many underscores in my Instagram handle and I can never remember it. Believe it is @island_Annie_, but I may need to change it to something that trips off the tongue a little better.
Okay, no worries. What we'll do is we'll make sure we whack all of that in the show notes so people can find you easily and effortlessly. And I just want to say thank you so much for taking a punt on a random message saying, Annie, do you want to come on my podcast? I'm really glad you said yes. Thank you so much.
Not at all. I think that's just kind of emblematic of how I think we should all live life. You've got to say yes to things and you end up meeting incredible light-minded women. So thank you so much for extending the invitation.
Thank you. Thank you, Annie. And I hope we'll speak again soon.
Thank you. And happy Christmas.
Yeah, happy Christmas.
Okay, come on. How good was that advice? I love that. Both three things that you can do this season of madness, as we head towards Christmas, and the advice Annie would have given her 21-year-old self. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. Keep your eyes and ears peeled for the next bonus episode, which drops next Friday. Until then, wishing you a very sparkly and time out sort of a Christmas. Take care. If you enjoyed this podcast from Inside the Hive by Quiet the Hive, then please leave us a 5-star rating or drop us any comments in the box below. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Any comments or ratings you give us all help other people who would benefit from the content to find us. Thanks so much.